Support for this podcast comes from Is Business Broken, a podcast from Questrom School of Business. Stick around until the end of this podcast for a preview of the first episode, a conversation with Dean Susan Fournier, where she answers the question at the heart of the show.
Ladies and gentlemen, welcome to Beyonce Homecoming 2018.
From NPR and WBUR Boston, I'm Meghna Chakrabarty, and this is On Point. Homecoming, Beyonce's Netflix documentary of her path-breaking 2018 Coachella concert. It begins with the stunning image of Queen Bee reborn as Nefertiti. Beyonce is here to make a statement. The first black woman ever to headline Coachella, she invokes Nina Simone, Maya Angelou, Audre Lorde, W.E.B. Du Bois, the jubilation and talent from historically black colleges and universities. She's deliberately stating a mission in this documentary to celebrate black intellectual history and culture and to put herself in that context. The queen stands atop the world of pop for sure, a consummate entertainer. The music and visual artistry are ecstatic. But as Lorde also famously said, the personal is the political. So how do we measure Beyoncé's power as a champion of black excellence? This hour on Point, understanding Beyoncé's homecoming. And you can join us. Have you seen it? Have you seen the Netflix documentary? What did you make of Homecoming? Beyoncé says it was important that she brought black culture to the festival stage. What influence and impact does that have on audiences beyond Coachella? Join us anytime at onpointradio.org or on Twitter and Facebook at On Point Radio. Well, joining us today from New York is Hannah Georges, culture writer at The Atlantic. We have a link to her story headlined Beyoncé's Black Intellectual Homecoming. That link is at onpointradio.org. Hannah, welcome to the program.
Thank you for having me.
I'm so excited to have this conversation. I can't even tell
me
you.
Too.
But I want to, before we get any further, I want to say that also from Houston, Texas, is Joey Guerra, music critic and pop culture writer at the Houston Chronicle. We have a link to his reporting on Beyoncé at onpointradio.org. Joey, welcome to you as well.
Thank you.
Really delighted
Very
to have
excited.
You both. I've watched Homecoming three times now, and I'm going to go on a fourth, fifth, and sixth round, I'm sure. But you know, we started off with the just truly ecstatic musicality from the band that she had with her at Coachella. I actually also want to hear Beyoncé herself. So here's another moment from the Homecoming concert. This is Beyoncé singing Run the World, Girls.
Coachella, thank you for allowing me to be the first black woman to headline Coachella. Ain't that about a... This song is dedicated to all the incredible women that opened up the doors for me. Thank you so much, ladies. Do we have any strong women out there tonight? Sing along!
Around the World from Beyoncé's Coachella concert last year. Hannah Georges, let's just start with this. First of all, as Beyoncé says, she was the first black woman to headline at Coachella. And she knew that. That was central to her mission of what she wanted to accomplish in this concert. So what did she do so successfully last year that's captured in this documentary?
Oh, man. I mean, she says it at one point in the documentary, right? She says, rather than me bringing my flower crown, I wanted to bring our culture to Coachella, right? And so I think to use that massive stage and that space and what is, you know, a really important space in music to sort of explicitly showcase elements of black culture and elements of, like, black American collegial culture or collegiate culture was, I think, extraordinary to see and to witness and to see her be so deliberate about.
Well, and so let's talk a little bit more about the historically black colleges and universities and that culture that she brought to the stage, right? Because we have the drum line, we have the musicians, the stepping, like it's all there. And to see, I have so much I want to say here. I'm so sorry. I'm going to follow through my words.
No,
but there's so much talent on the stage all at once. It is something to behold.
Absolutely. I mean, she says something about this too, right? She says, I wanted a black orchestra. I wanted the steppers. I needed the vocalists. I wanted different characters. I didn't want us all doing the same thing. And sort of right after she explains that and what her vision was, she starts talking about how unfair it is, how much swag there was on her stage, and how all these people are bringing such vibrance, right? Like, you have the baton twirling. You have, the men, when she does the sort of bugaboo portion, mm-hmm. she has like a little skit that she has that's sort of pulling from fraternity probates, which is something that you're not going to see or immediately understand in that Coachella audience if it's not something you've been part of in the context of a black space. Yeah. So it was just really great to see her do that then on stage in 2018 and not explain it, and then to come back a year later and to say, okay, well, here's all the context.
Right.
And here's why I wanted to celebrate it.
So I want to talk about that context in much more detail. But Joey, first of all, let me bring you in here. Give us your first take on, did you see the concert when it was live streamed last year? Is that when you first saw it?
Yeah, that was the first time I saw the concert, was the live streaming, along with probably millions of other Beehive members.
And what did you take? Correct. What did you feel about it then versus what you see in the Netflix documentary?
I mean, I think the first time I saw it, maybe like many people, you know, you kind of just take it for what it is on the surface, which is this amazing, incredible Beyoncé concert. I mean, anybody who's seen her perform live before knows what her shows are like. And this show really, I think, did a great job of condensing all of like sort of these past tours and performances into one. You got Destiny's Child, you had, you know, Jay-Z, you had older stuff, you had the newer stuff from the last couple of albums. But then, of course, like you said, watching it on the Netflix film is a very different experience, because she does put it into context and, you know, she does tell you what she's trying to do, what she's trying to accomplish, while at the same time including all these other elements from great black leaders and performers kind of within, that weaves it all together. Mm-hmm. So, it's really, I think I was blown away when I first watched it, and then I was blown away again watching the film on Netflix.
Yeah. So, Hannah, you mentioned that Beyoncé in the film says very clearly about what her mission was for when she decided to do Coachella. Let's just play that portion of the documentary. I mean, when she talks about that she very much wanted to draw on the influence of the culture from historically black colleges and universities.
When I decided to do Coachella, instead of me pulling out my flower crown, it was more important that I brought our culture to Coachella. I wanted all of these different characters, and I wanted it to feel the way I felt when I went to Battle of the Bands, because I grew up seeing those shows and that being the highlight of my year.
That's Beyoncé in the documentary Homecoming. Now, around that time, also in the documentary, we hear an archival clip from Nina Simone discussing what she felt was her responsibility to black listeners when she spoke at Morehouse College in 1969.
Why am I so insistent upon pushing them to identify with black culture? My job is to somehow make them curious enough, persuade them by hook or crook to get more aware of themselves and where they came from and what they are into and what is already there, and just to bring it out.
That's Nina Simone in 1969. Hannah Georges, this is a very deliberate juxtaposition that Beyoncé is making. I mean, is she right to place herself in this lineage of powerful champions of black culture in the public eye?
Yeah, I mean, I think it's absolutely warranted, right? Like, we're seeing someone who has gotten blowback for, you know, from white fans, from, you know, when she performed at the Super Bowl and there was a controversy about whether or not police officers would show up to do security because she was showing up in sort of Black Panther reminiscent, reminiscent outfits with her dancers. This is someone who's been critical of law enforcement as it relates to police brutality, which disproportionately impacts black people in the states, and who, not just sort of in her activism, but in her art, very deliberately centers and pulls from and champions black traditions and black women in particular. So I don't think it's a stretch to make that comparison. And I think even sort of bringing Nina in also is sort of an act of her amplifying, or an act of Beyonce amplifying other Black women and sort of leaning on that.
Yeah, you know, it's interesting that you say that, because, you know, the question that I was going to lead to next was that in her music, I mean, Nina Simone was overtly political in her music, right? You know, thinking of Mississippi Goddamn, of course. Beyonce in the music isn't necessarily political in the same way, but with these sort of visual spectacles that she's putting together, is that, you know, her, it obviously seems like it's her expressing her politics.
Yeah, absolutely. And I think we've seen her ramp that up in the last few years, especially like with Lemonade and Post-Slam, you know, in the sort of years after. But if you look at a song like Freedom and you look at the way that she performs that and the visuals that she pulls in for that, that's not an apolitical song by any means. And there's, you know, there's a very specific message she's going for with that one. And it's not for all of her fans.
Yeah. So, Joey, we have just about 30 seconds before we have to take a quick break here, though. I'm wondering if can you, with Hannah mentioned Lemonade, now we have Homecoming. I mean, can you, you can't separate Beyonce's visual artistry from the music anymore. It's all one big package, isn't it?
Yes, absolutely. And she's been very deliberate about that. I mean, that started with the surprise visual album in 2013, continued with Lemonade. Now with Homecoming, she has sort of package these things together and saying, I'm not just going to give you the music, I'm going to give you the visual as well. And she's been so smart about kind of bringing in people with the music and then, you know, delivering the messages in the visual. That's, I think, part of her brilliance.
Well, Joey and Hannah, hang on here. We're going to go out into a break with Diva again from Beyonce's 2018 Coachella concert as featured in the Netflix documentary Homecoming. And we want to know if you've seen this documentary and what do you make of Beyonce's very deliberate and studied efforts to put Black culture on the main stage and whether or not she was successful in doing that. I think she was, but we want to hear from you. This is On Point.
Support for the On Point podcast comes from Indeed. If you need to hire, you need Indeed. Indeed is your matching and hiring platform that lets you find candidates fast. Ditch the busy work and use Indeed for scheduling, screening, and messaging so you can connect with candidates faster. And listeners get a $75 sponsored job credit to get your jobs more visibility at Indeed.com/on point. That's Indeed.com/on point. Terms and conditions apply. Need to hire? You need Indeed.
This is On Point. I'm Meghna Chakrabarty, and you're listening to The Buzz Drumline, an interlude during Beyonce's 2018 Coachella performance with historically Black college and university drumline players. It's captured in this documentary on Netflix right now called Homecoming, a film by Beyonce. And we're talking about the visual spectacle, the political message that Beyonce was sending in her Coachella performance last year. She was the first African-American woman ever to headline there. We're at 1-800-423-8255. That's 800-423-TALK. We want to hear from you. And we're joined today by Hannah Georges. She's a culture writer for The Atlantic. Joey Guerra also is with us. He's a music critic and pop culture writer at the Houston Chronicle. Now, I loved this interlude with the drumline. And I want to play a little bit more of Beyonce herself in the documentary describing why she really put historically Black colleges and universities at the center of her Coachella performance.
I always dreamed of going to an HBCU. My college was Destiny's Child. My college was traveling around the world, and life was my teacher. I wanted a Black orchestra. I wanted the steppers. I needed the vocalists. I wanted different characters. I didn't want us all doing the same thing. And the amount of swag is just limitless.
It's Beyoncé in the Homecoming documentary. Hannah Georges, talk to us more about the significance of Beyoncé putting HBCUs at the center of this performance.
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, you know, I think it's important to note that she's doing this not just at a time when Coachella has never had a black woman headline before her, but this is also a time sort of broadly in our culture when HBCUs are under attack, right? When a lot of HBCUs are deeply underfunded, when the president is frequently diminishing their importance at best, if not outrightly sort of attacking graduates or their credibility. So for her to sort of dig deep and say, like, this is something that's important to us, not just to the students and not just to graduates, but to black culture in America and to the extent that black culture in America shapes American culture writ large, this is what informs me and my work, and you should be paying attention. So I think it's beyond her Coachella presence even. It's sort of a much larger social and political statement.
Yeah. Well, we have a lot of callers who want to join us. And folks, I just if the calls sound a little awkward, I just want to let you know we're having a slight technical problem on our phone. So there's a tiny bit of delay. So bear with us. But let's go to Ari, who's calling from Sacramento, California. Ari, you're on the air.
Hi. How are you guys doing?
Doing great, Ari. Go ahead.
Yeah. So I was actually in the performance of playing guitar. And honestly, even in rehearsals, even doing the show, because I didn't see the visual until Netflix actually came out, the Netflix special came out. And just to be a part of that was unique in itself. And at first, it didn't feel like, it felt like the college experience, but it just felt nice, like, to be surrounded with people who would like me in a room together in my work, only because once you graduate from school, and I graduated from the University of Maryland, which was obviously not a historically black school, but being in the Black Student Union, you know each other a lot. But out in the real world, you really don't get those experiences where you guys just need to be together, and it's like school all over again, where it's just black people in the same kind of situation together. Like, it reminded me of just a party at school, and I haven't been in that situation since I graduated 3 years ago.
All right, let me jump in here. Again, the delay is just, it's paining me, but we'll work through it. So you were a guitarist at this concert? I mean, bass or electric guitar? What did you play?
Electric guitar. You can actually see me standing in the middle of the pyramid for the song Right Before I Care.
Yes, that's that. I was wondering if that's you. That was a fantastic moment. There are so many questions I want to ask you, Ari. Thank you for calling. It must have been hard work too, right? Because the documentary shows us behind the scenes how everyone was working together for what, 8 months to pull off this massive show. What was that like?
It was one of the most incredible experiences of my life. I got the call on my birthday that I was being flown out the next morning for it. And
oh my God,
to work with such amazing people. And once again, like, having to work with people on that sort of level, that offered me the opportunity to go on tour right after. And I had never been out the country. I didn't think I was going to make it out of D.C. doing something like that.
Yeah.
So it didn't feel like work. Of course, it was hard. And they expected a lot, but it was, like, I couldn't wait to get there every day.
Yeah. Ari, can I just ask you another question? What does it mean to you, or what impact has it had on you to be in this space that Beyoncé has created, or created on that stage? I mean, you know, we've been talking about her championing of black culture and black excellence. I mean, at Coachella, which is largely, you know, considered to be a white space. So, like, what impact did it have on you as a black artist?
Well, it was just, it made me feel like I was back in school. Like, it made me feel like I was in that space again. And I didn't think I'd be able to experience it, only because, you know, I'm always on the road. I always have shows. So I missed a lot of the homecomings and the block shows and the probates. But on that stage, both of those weekends, you can't hear the audio because the audience is so loud. But on stage, the actual performance on stage, it was like our own homecoming. People cheering for each other, hooting and hollering. Like, it felt like school, and I loved it.
Well, before you go, Ari, Joey, you're the music critic. Do you have any questions for her?
Oh, gosh. I just... I feel like I'm, you know, that much closer to Beyonce now that we're talking to you. what did working with her and, you know, working on that process do for you as a musician, as a performer? I mean, in terms of stepping up your game and you know, something that maybe you're still carrying with you even today.
Well, obviously you saw like her work ethic. I mean, it wasn't fully shown on the documentary, but she worked hard. And seeing everything that she worked hard in, all the different departments and things, it really made me step my game up. Because if you have something that you need to learn, there's no excuse as to why you can't learn it. And she's doing a million things, and all you have to do is learn this part. So every day, if I needed to learn something, trust me, by the next day I had it.
And Hannah, same to you. Is there a question you wanted to ask Ari?
Oh, my goodness. Yeah. What, you know, when you, like a million of them. No, when you sort of look back on this years later, I guess, what are you most excited to carry forward?
Just to know that I was a part of something that showed us.
Mm-hmm.
And showed us for real.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. Well, Ari, thank you so much for your call and for being part of that show. As I said at the top of the show, I've seen it 3 times. And when you come down and you play your guitar and you're right next to Beyonce there, it's a thrilling moment. So well done. And thank you so much for calling us. Let's just get back to the music here a little bit and hear another moment from the concert. This is when Beyonce and that tremendous band and dancers do Sorry.
Fingers up! Put them hands high, put them hands high, wave it in his face, wave it in his face, tell him boy bye, let's go.
Back to the phones. Suzanne is calling from Mackinac, Illinois. Suzanne, you're on the air.
Hi. It's good to hear you so excited, Megan, about a show. I saw Homecoming the other night. I had to turn it off. I was so excited I had to turn it off about 3/4 of the way through. I'm 62 years old. I've never seen a single Beyonce performance, but I've wanted to. I'm a student of life, so I want to know what the big deal is for my nieces and nephews and son and daughter. Absolutely astounding creativity, deep, deep culture, the beauty of the dancers, the musicians, the singers, yeah. the choreography, the audience.
Susan, can I just jump in here for a second? Is this, sorry for interrupting again, the delay on our line is a bit problematic, but we're doing our best here. Had you been exposed to this culture before?
Well, yes, I, only because I love life, mm-hmm. and I study and love to learn about everything. I'm 62-year-old white woman from Wisconsin, and you know, I never. Well, fortunately, I grew up in the '70s, '60s, and '70s, so the music was pretty multicultural then.
Mm. Well, Suzanne, I'm going to take it back from you. Yeah, I'm so sorry. I'm so sorry. Again, I'm going to apologize throughout this hour because the phone lines are just problematic. So it's going to sound like I'm talking over everybody, but it's not intentional. Suzanne, thank you for your call. Hannah, I wanted to reflect on what Suzanne was saying with both you and Joey, because you started off our conversation by saying that in the concert itself, Beyonce doesn't explain, right? But we get the context in the documentary. So there's multiple audiences and multiple versions of the story that she's telling here. But she does it in a way which, between the concert and the documentary, it feels very inclusive. It's both for Black audiences and other audiences as well.
Right. Right, absolutely. I mean, you see her pulling in, and I think this is where the work of her bringing in those intellectual, that intellectual history helps kind of provide that context, right? Because when we saw it last year, we saw a performance and we saw cultural hallmarks that if you're Black or if you've grown up in certain spaces, you know immediately. But she brings in both her own sort of voiceovers and explains in that way, and then just quotes extensively from so many people, right? You have the W.E.B. Du Bois, you have the Audre Lorde, the Marion Wright Edelman, and all of this sort of builds a kind of 360 look at what's going on. And for folks who don't have that kind of explicit knowledge of what's what some of these moments are, even having the dancers and the folks who are part of it, Didi Emma, who's the woman who does the baton twirling, explains that she went to Spelman and her family went to Spelman and Morehouse, and they're from Nigeria and grew up in Atlanta. And, you know, you have this sort of multiple people chiming in to form a chorus in a way.
I'm Meghna Chakrabarty. This is On Point. Let's listen to another moment from the concert as captured in the documentary. This is when the song Lift Every Voice and Sing makes an appearance.
Lift every voice and sing. Till earth and heaven ring with the
Beyoncé with Lift Every Voice and Sing, a song originally written in 1905. Hannah, what was the significance of her including this in the concert?
Oh, man. She does it twice, too. So she had it in the concert. She performs it, right? And then in the documentary, she also has Blue Ivy, her daughter, singing it, and Blue Ivy being really excited about it. And so you get this moment of Beyoncé saying, of course I'm going to celebrate Black pride in the American context, which has so often been against struggle and against racism. And then she brings in a sort of more celebratory moment with her daughter where she's able to explain what it means to, or just show what it means, rather, for this song and this legacy to carry on through future generations who haven't experienced some of the same things as intimately or as closely as maybe she has.
Yeah. Joey, what does it say about how Beyoncé sees herself as an artist, that she included this song in the concert?
I think it's really interesting because if you really think about where Beyoncé started and where she is now, there's been sort of a gradual but very, very deliberate evolution, to me, this was so perfectly exemplified in that first stretch of songs, which started with Crazy in Love, then went into Freedom, Lift Every Voice and Sing, and then Formation. I mean, just I can't imagine how much thought went into putting those songs in that order right there, because in a way, I feel like she's saying, I'm going to give you what you want, but you're also going to pay attention to these other things. And, I think, like I said this before, I think that's part of her genius is, she really sees herself as, I think, a pop icon. But on the other side of that, she does see herself as a leader in the cultural movement, somebody who can really bring these messages to the masses and make people curious about these things. I can almost guarantee that, people who weren't familiar with HBCUs or a lot of the things happening in this concert probably went afterwards and Googled a lot of these things. and that's great because, it's awareness and it's information and it's really, I think, doing what she set out to do.
Is anyone else doing this in the way that she is?
I don't think so. I mean, I think we've seen or we've really rallied behind people. The one that comes to mind, we talk a lot about Lady Gaga and what she does and empowering. And, she puts out important messages and, is a strong, leader for the LGBT movement and lots of these things. But, I think Lady Gaga has made a lot of stumbles. Beyoncé, in my opinion, has never really made a misstep. And she's done it in a way, like I said, that isn't hitting you over the head with these messages. But at this point in her career, this is something that she's very aware of, that she is very, deliberate about, and that, she wants to say. So I don't think there's really anyone currently that we can compare her to.
Yeah. Well, we are talking this hour about trying to understand what Beyoncé is telling all of us. In her documentary Homecoming, it captures her 2018 Coachella headlining performance. We're going to take a quick break here. There is a great moment in the concert where Jay-Z comes out, shares the mic with Beyoncé, even bows down before the queen. So we're going to go out with Deja Vu. We'll be right back. This is On Point.
Support for this podcast comes from Is Business Broken?, a podcast from Questrom School of Business. These days, it's hard to ignore the debate over the role business should play in society.
There's crescendo around profit, period. Is profit bad? Is capitalism evil? These themes are out there.
Is this criticism of business warranted? And if so, how do we fix it? Stick around until the end of this podcast for a preview of the first episode of the Is Business Broken podcast.
Say my name, say my name. No one is around you. Say, baby, I love you.
Sing a song.
This is On Point. I'm Meghna Chakrabarty. We're talking this hour about Beyoncé's documentary Homecoming, which tells the story of her path-breaking 2018 headlining performance at the Coachella Music Festival. We're at 1-800-423-8255. That's 800-423-TALK. And yes, during the concert, Beyoncé performed with Kelly Rowland and Michelle Williams of Destiny's Child. They came together to sing a couple of songs, including Say My Name. Joey, Gera, talk about this, because In the documentary, Beyoncé says very clearly that one of the many things she wanted to accomplish with this concert was also just sort of bringing together an encapsulation of her 22-year career so far. And right there is Destiny's Child.
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, I think, you know, this show really epitomizes who Beyoncé is as a live performer. And that moment, you know, was a standout among so many standout moments. You know, you can almost feel, even watching it on the screen, the energy rise in the crowd as they see these three figures come out, you know. And it's something that, like, all Beyoncé and Destiny's Child fans have wanted for years. You know, we want a new album, we want a tour, you know. So this was really a huge moment, you know, not just for her, but for Kelly and Michelle, but also for the fans. You know, this is something that I'm going to say we, because I'm definitely part of it, we have wanted for such a long time. And, you know, it was just, it was too short. That's the only thing I can say. You know, they could have done a whole other 2 hours of just Destiny's Child.
Hannah, what do you think?
Yes. No, I mean, absolutely agreed on all fronts. I appreciated how much it felt like she did some sort of very, very considered and very, you know, strategic fan service. You know, there was the Destiny's Child stuff, and not just Say My Name, right? But they did Soldier, which is like, if you're a Destiny's Child fan from ages ago, like, that's a bit of a deep cut. And it's something that, like, your average Coachella audience might not know. But it was very, you know, for my fans who've been rocking with me for this whole time, I know you love that song. She played, she did Check On It from the Pink Panther soundtrack, the song with Slim Thug, which is another sort of, like, Beyoncé stan, like, cult favorite. That isn't one of her most like commercially or sort of widely known songs. So it was really fun to see her do that kind of stuff and do this stuff that's like, you know, she has all of her really thoughtful, all of her very sort of intellectual material that she does. And then there's moments where she's like, listen, I'm an artist, I want to have fun, and my fans want to do that too. So to see her wed those two things was really exciting.
Well, let's go to Jennifer, who's calling from Boston, Massachusetts. Jennifer, you're on the air.
Hi, Meghna. Thanks for taking my call.
Great to have you. Go ahead, Jennifer.
I loved it. Just as excited as you were at the beginning of the show, I feel the same way. I watched it with my daughter. She's a teenager. We watched it last weekend, and I've just been obsessed ever since. I keep listening to it over and over, the album. What was so powerful for us was watching all of the Black women mm-hmm. as musicians. Mm-hmm. My daughter's a drummer. She's in a band. And it's really special to see women up there on the stage, for her to feel like, I could do that myself. She even said that, Mom, could I be up there? I said, someday. Beyonce might be too old by then, but yeah, with someone else. It just was really powerful. You know, I'm a working mother. I'm an executive. And watching her work so hard and do it with her three children, it was awesome.
Okay, so Jennifer, you've said a lot that we all want to respond to here, but thank you so much for your call. So Jennifer mentioned that, yes, Beyonce talks about the fact that she prepared 8 months for this Coachella concert as a mother of three now, right? Her six-year-old and her two twins. And I want to play a moment from that where she talks about how she had originally supposed to play Coachella the year before, but was pregnant with her twins. Very high-risk pregnancy. She had a lot of complications. And she talks about that in detail in the documentary. So here she is.
I was supposed to do Coachella the year prior, but I got pregnant unexpectedly, and it ended up being twins, which was even more of a surprise. My body went through more than I knew it could. I had an extremely difficult pregnancy. I had high blood pressure. I developed toxemia, preeclampsia, and in the womb, one of my baby's heartbeat paused a few times, so I had to get an emergency C-section.
It's Beyonce talking about her pregnancy with her twins. She also mentions that after her twins were born, she weighed 218 pounds and worked very, very hard for months to get to the place she was where we see her in the documentary. Hannah Georges, this part really resonated with me, right? Because as Jennifer was saying, we see Beyonce as a working mother also. And the demands she has as a global performer, but she also talks about putting her family front and center and how the calculus was different for her this time around.
Right. I mean, she says very explicitly, right, like, I can't, you know, there was a time when I could do 15-hour rehearsals and I can't do that anymore. I'm a mother of a six-year-old and of twins now, of babies. And she showed, you know, there's a scene where the twins are brought to her at the end of a long rehearsal, and she looks so excited and so joyful. And you kind of, it's such a sharp transition from her sort of really regimented, work-heavy focus. But it was really, I think, her choosing to include the bits about how difficult her pregnancy was and how, like, life-threatening it was really reminded me of Serena Williams having mm-hmm. done the same when she spoke about hers. And sort of when you look at maternal mortality in this country and the way that it affects Black women in particular, that also feels strategic. She didn't have to tell people that. She didn't have to be open and transparent in that way. And it does feel like her having done so speaks to a much larger trend. And, you know, if Beyonce and Serena Williams, with their wealth and their stature and their resources, are still in these extremely dangerous situations because of, you know, the way that health systems disregard Black women's concerns, like, how much more does that affect other Black women who don't have those things?
Absolutely. And then she shows us in detail how hard they're all working, right? I mean, it is.
Oh, yeah.
she embodies her particular form on stage of Black excellence. But as viewers, when we're just watching a concert, we're seeing the end product of all that hard work. But in the documentary, we get to see what it takes. And it's extraordinary, Joey. I mean, 8 months, 3 sound stages, 4 months just rehearsing with the band, 4 months rehearsing with the dancers. And somehow, in the end, a couple of hundred really talented people come together and make this spectacle, which is jaw-dropping.
Yeah. I mean, look, I mean, when she said she weighed 218 pounds, I mean, that's almost as much as I weigh. So, I mean, and I'm 6'1". So, I mean, it's an incredible thing to sort of see her not only do this, but do this, you know, at the top of her game. I mean, when you watch this concert, you know, this is an unparalleled, I think, moment in pop history. I mean, as we're talking, the thing that this makes me think of, and I know it's in some ways it's very different, but I think back to the Madonna documentary, Truth or Dare, and how she was one of the first women to really put on this big theatrical show, you know, with lots of people, you know, and also, you know, in her ways, she was, you know, showcasing minorities and showcasing LGBT people in that documentary as well. You know, and thinking about all the hard work she put in, it really kind of mirrors that for me in a lot of ways. But, you know, it's really incredible to see the two sides. And every time you play one of the clips of her talking, it just strikes me that she sounds so tired, you know? Mm-hmm. I mean, it's amazing.
Right.
But you don't see any of that on stage at all.
I literally don't know how she did it.
Well, I mean, she says toward the end that she's never, ever going to put herself through that again. And I think that that was really heartening to hear. You know, it felt important to have her include that, right? Like the way that she talks about having gone from, you know, her weight and where her body was at immediately after giving birth to where she was at on stage is stressful. And so for her to include that was maybe not something that is healthy to replicate again, I think was important.
Yeah. You know, as a journalist, I have to underscore, though, that Beyonce is given writing, directing, and executive producing credits in this documentary as well. So this
yes.
is very much how she wants to be seen. It is a very
yes.
controlled image of her. We don't get to ask her the questions that we'd want to ask. I want to underscore that. But yet she's making choices here, right? She's choosing to show a certain aspects of her own vulnerability, which I think is very laudable. So let's go back to the phones, though. Let's go to Rachel, who's calling from Woodbury, Vermont. Rachel, you're on the air.
Hi, thank you for having me. I just wanted to say that, you know, seeing what Beyonce has been doing the past few years has been so important for me because I am a mixed-race black woman that lives in the Northeast Kingdom of Vermont, and I often feel very cut off from black culture, and just seeing what she's doing, seeing her embodying African deities like Oshun and hearing the drum lines and all of that, like it just brings back those feelings of the joy of being together and being black and just having joy about being a black person in the culture. And so it's been huge, and it's huge for people like me who are not in the culture anymore, but miss it so much.
Yeah. Rachel, thank you so much for your call. And on this idea of the joy that's portrayed or shown in this documentary, I want to go back to the music because we talked about Destiny's Child. We talked about Jay-Z doing a cameo where Solange also shows up on stage with her sister Beyonce. They perform Get Me Bodied. Beyonce and her sister Solange doing Get Me Bodied at the Coachella concert last year. Hannah Georges, this is one that you wanted us to play because you wanted to talk about it. What was special for you about this moment?
Okay, well, I mean, for starters, I love Get Me Bodied just as a song. But, I mean, it's great. I love their interplay. I love Beyonce and Solange's interplay. I love that, you know, Solange was instrumental in Get Me Bodied existing. And so to see them do it together is great. But, you know, one of the reasons I love the song is not just that it's, like, fun to listen to, but that it's such a... it's a song that is dedicated to and inspires such collective joy, right? The whole thing
yes.
about it is, like, you're getting ready to go out with your girls, you know, like, patch your weave ladies. Like, it's very there's a pluralism to it that I think is indicative of when Beyonce can just pull a whole group together, right? It's a formation thing, right? Where she's addressing a group where she's not, you know, you might be in your room listening by yourself, but you sort of feel the, like, phantom collective with you, if that's, you know. It's just fun to feel like you're part of a whole. And that's one of the songs that I think does that in such a joyful way.
I just want to talk for another minute about the joy that we see on the stage in this documentary, because I think that's one of the things that I responded to most powerfully. It is so joyful. It is so jubilant. And look, we're living in complex and fraught times. And to see this unabashedly joyful representation of black culture, especially, I mean, I feel like it lifts up everybody who watches. And there's a particular magic or power to that that was kind of unexpected. I didn't know what to expect when I watched it. So Joey, is that something that Beyonce in particular is doing better than others right now?
I think so. You know, I think, you know, she is taking on these very specific ideas and themes of black culture, black colleges, you know, celebrating black women and femininity and womanhood. But she does it in a way that, you're right, you know, she makes everyone kind of feel that magic, feel that energy, because, you know, there are so many other kind of disenfranchised groups or, you know, other groups of people that are maybe watching this concert, watching this performance, listening to her music, that respond in some way, that can identify with so many of these messages, with feeling unheard or feeling ignored. You know, as a Latino man, as a gay man, you know, I respond so strongly to so much of what she does. And, you know, she's not necessarily always speaking directly to me, but I feel the message, I understand the message, and I celebrate the message with her. And I think that is what, you know, everyone can get out of listening to a Beyoncé song or watching a Beyoncé concert.
Yeah. Hannah, what's your take on that?
Yeah, absolutely right. I think there's a way that she brings both specificity and sort of lifts up groups that have not or that have historically faced challenges in the context of the country or even, you know, internationally. Like, she brings in sort of dancehall and reggae influences and just really celebrates, like, Black creative culture and Black creative tradition. But there's a way that Beyoncé's sheer, like, precision and excellence and sort of work ethic is in and of itself, like, deeply inspiring to anybody who either, you know, is artistic themselves or just who, you know, who believes in the beauty and is inspired by great work. It's hard to watch her do what she does and not think, like, oh, this is possible. That's amazing. And so I think even in the sort of way that she executes her work, there's something in there for everybody.
I want to know, after Lemonade especially, I was like, oh, this is it. This is the top. What's she going to do next? And then we had Homecoming, and I'm like, oh, this is it. This is the top. This is peak Beyoncé. What is she going to do next? I mean, how can we predict this, Joey? I mean, like, what do you think she might do next?
Run for president?
No.
I think we need a Beyoncé Solange ticket, you know?
Oh my God.
No, I mean, I think you're right. You know, when she put out the visual album in 2013, I was in a car with a friend like at 2 a.m. and we found out. And, you know, I felt like the world literally stopped when I found out that was released. And then you're right. And then Lemonade and now this. I mean, I don't know how she does it, but she continually tops herself. And I think part of how she does it is Beyoncé, you know, Beyoncé hasn't had a huge, humongous radio hit in a while. You know, her albums sell really well, but, you know, there are other artists that sell better. But, you know, Beyoncé is one of the, I think, rare kind of pop artists at the top of her game that doesn't worry about and doesn't need to worry about, you know, songs on the radio or things like that. So I think that gives her a lot more power, a lot more freedom, a lot more creative liberty, because she knows that we're going to respond no matter what she does.
Well, Joey Guerra, music critic and pop culture writer at the Houston Chronicle, thank you so much for joining us today.
Thank you.
And Hannah Georges, culture writer at the Atlantic, it has been so great to have you both for this joyful conversation. I needed it. So thank you so much, Hannah.
Thank you, Magna.
And Joey mentioned the word freedom. We are going to go out on the track Freedom from, again, Beyoncé's Coachella performance. This is On Point. I'm Meghna Chakrabarty, and we'll let the queen take us out.
Ooh, I'm telling these tears going fall away, fall away. May the last one burn into flames. Freedom, freedom, I can't move. Freedom, cut me loose, yeah. Freedom, freedom, where are you? 'Cause I need freedom too. I break chains all by myself. Won't let my freedom run in hell. Hey, I'ma keep running 'cause I'm waiting.
Support for this podcast comes from Is Business Broken, a podcast from Questrom School of Business. Listen on for a preview of one of the episodes featuring Susan Fournier, Alan Questrom Professor, and Dean.
So let's start this conversation with the title of the show, Is Business Broken? It's a provocative title and a question. Where did this come from? Why that question now?
We're in a big cultural moment where capitalism, business, market systems are really being scrutinized and debated, and the role of business with it. So I think the question is just on the table. It's on people's minds. It's in the news media. It's in conversations. I think there are growing voices, loud voices, especially among young people who seem increasingly to believe that business and maybe capitalism with it, are harmful and create rather than solve problems for society. And what we do seem to hear are those loud voices. And they are very black and white. There are protagonists and the antagonists and the pros and the cons. And there's really no middle discussion. It's sort of like people for and against, and it's loud.
Right. For and against DEI, for instance, right? A battle at play.
Right.
The way you describe it and the way you describe the polarization, it makes it feel like very much of the digital age, right? It feels very much of today. Some of those arguments have been around, though, right? Is this criticism of business and this question, is business broken, is that a new question?
You are so right. It is not a new question. Schumpeter, he was a professor at Harvard, and he's also maybe one of the most influential political economists of the early 20th century. He called for the death of capitalism, the death of business, 100 years ago.
Okay. Wow.
And when he critiqued way back then, he said the very successes of capitalism would bring about its downfall because it would create values hostile to capitalism, and that this would particularly take hold among intellectuals who were critiquing. So there's a lot of that same kind of dynamic happening today, and that's 100 years old. But yeah, we've seen this kind of cultural fervor playbook many times in the past, often precipitated by big crises.
Find the full episode by searching for Is Business Broken wherever you listen to podcasts, and learn more about the Mehrotra Institute for Business, Markets, and Society at ibms.bu.edu.